What happened in Italy is that we have been working a lot in trying to making people aware about the fact that if you turn your head on the other side and want to look what has been happening and still happens in Gaza, you are basically giving your support to the violation of international law and the violation of human rights for all the people. And in Italy, we have been witnessing something that, in my opinion, is a political miracle, because we had today the launch of a national strike, and we had hundreds of thousands of people who, in a non-violent, totally non-violent way, has been marching in Rome. I am in Rome now, but in Milan.
Maria
in Florence,
Elena Delia, we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you for that update. We'll continue to update on Monday. Spokesperson for the Global Samud Flotilla. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Right now is Cartober, and it's the best time to support KBOO by donating your vehicle today. You can get rid of that old boat, car, van, truck, jet ski, or RV, and have the proceeds from the sale go to KBOO and receive a tax deduction for your support of community media. For more information, check out KBOO.FM/vehicle or call 877-526-6163.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service helping those who are feeling sad, struggling with alcohol or drug use, or just need someone to talk to. Trained counselors are able to listen and provide support 24/7. Confidential support is available by text or phone call to 988. More information is available at 988oregon.org.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is our Friday talk show, Genius Box. I'm Althea.
And I'm Reed.
You love the pregnant pause before I wonder if you're going to remember your name.
It's so the audience thinks that I'm like just entering the room as
Oh,
you
yeah,
speak.
Yeah. We can add some...
The consummate professional.
The consummate professional. No,
what
Reed
was arriving
here
right at the stroke of 8:01 and 27 seconds.
Love to be here. Glad for it. What are we talking about today? Has anything interesting happened in the Portland area recently? I can't really think of anything.
That's what I like to talk about. It's the buzzing sound that's radiating from my smile.
Oh,
the rictus grin that I'm presenting to you right now.
I thought you were going to say it's the helicopter circling the south waterfront.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess that is also true.
I guess it could be both.
Let's not associate my smile with the helicopter.
Okay,
It's National Smile Day.
It's National Smile Day, which we just found out and isn't related to the content of this program really at all.
At all. But I'm forced to smile.
Yeah.
In recognition of the day, which is why I've operated these hooks. I have a series of hooks pulleys.
It might be too visceral.
Okay, sorry.
But yes, want to acknowledge up top, of course, the potential National Guard deployment that's kind of been all-consuming this week.
Yeah.
The court hearing on the temporary injunction to possibly stop that is happening this morning. It's happening today. So just, you know, we know about it.
We're aware.
Everybody's keeping an eye on it.
We're waiting with bated breath.
But, you know, because it's been such a big story, there's other stuff this week that maybe didn't get enough attention. We're going to talk more about the deployment and stuff later, the National Guard. But
We personally are. And then you are also going to talk more about it on KBOO.
Oh, yeah, on the news, probably. Tune in at 5. But there's some
headlines. Are you allowed to pitch other KBOO shows?
Yeah, of course.
During your own KBOO show?
Any other shows you want to give a shout out to?
At this moment?
Yeah.
No.
Oh. Okay, great.
Oh, I'm sorry. Nate is vigorously pointing to himself. Of course.
We got a shout out. Nate's show. Sorry, hold the script up.
Holding up his water bottle, which has a sticker, and it's you're not even showing the sticker.
Well, it's a little dark in there.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah, now, anyway. Now you are.
Check out Nate's show showing, if you like,
you're just showing
games.
The naked edge of the water bottle. It's sort of...
Lots of great shows on KBOO, you know?
Lots of great shows on KBOO.
Check them out. Scroll through. Why not? Okay, I want to talk some headlines and some things that maybe didn't get enough notice.
Headline KBOO.
That's what the segment's called?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
You can clip that and use that for future.
Thank you. Portland Street Response is expanding its hours, and they got a new phone number. Yes.
That's exciting.
That's important. When you get a new phone number, you have to like text all of the contacts that you have that you want to keep, and then maybe there's some people where it's like, you don't need to know.
Did they go for one of the phone numbers that spells out a word?
I'll tell you what their phone number is, and maybe somebody can tell us what that spells. It's 503-823-7773. You can also reach Street Response by calling 911. They'll be able to help you out. But yeah, they're 7 days a week, 6 to midnight. And this is something that City Council kind of put in the works earlier this summer and has been in conversation and fought about dating back before the last election.
Back when there were Medicare. Is there still funding that's available to Street Response if they go to 24 hours?
I guess I don't know.
Or is that all nixed?
Well, I don't know. Hey, Medicaid funding? I guess, well, the government's shut down, so I don't think they're going to make
any
progress on that at the moment, vis-a-vis those type of funds. But if you are wanting to call Street Response and have them respond to somebody who may be in crisis, that is expanded. And also the result of years of public pressure to get that... take the pilot project more mainstream. So I wanted to let people know that something good happened.
That's good.
Yeah. Thank you. I got so insecure in that moment that you were going to be like, oh, it's bad, actually.
No, that would have been... I'm sorry. I'm coming with a villainous edge.
Yeah,
My grin is rictus, but my heart is still... pure. What's the opposite of rictus? Pudgy.
I don't know. Pudgy, I guess. Another headline I wanted to tell folks about is that the extended parking hours that kind of came out of nowhere, you may have seen all of those stickers that were saying that you have to pay to park through 10 p.m. through downtown. I think they were starting to add them in Central East Side and then like Northwest. All of that has been paused. I think that's good. There's also this aspect of it that's potential like administrative overreach because Wilson just kind of did it because PBOT has that budget hole that they can't seem to patch.
There's no better way to bring people downtown than with the incentive
pay to park. And like as soon as it was introduced, I was really thinking, I was like, no, that is a really nice thing about going down. Like if you go down after work, you probably don't have to pay.
Yeah.
Until... you know, I guess
the next morning.
Yeah.
Until you stumble out in a stupor. You say, oh, it's been 24 hours.
I'm getting a ticket. I was also hazarding a guess, since this also came along with a hiring freeze at PBOT, that I don't know that they were going to hire folks to stay on and ticket people till 10 p.m. That's just a thought that I was having. But this also...
Volunteers.
You know, volunteers. Hey, do you...
You ever want to be a meter maid?
That's an interesting idea. I don't think it's a good idea, but it is an interesting idea.
I think it's a good idea if you're allowed to do at least one personal ticketing. Revenge ticketing every shift.
Right.
That would be my policy.
So yeah, I guess that's on pause for now. Not going to be enforced. Probably going to be revised. Going from 7 to 10 was wild, by the way.
Yeah, why not 8:30?
Or 8?
Or 7:15. Maybe that'd be too little. Well, you work your way up.
But just that it didn't happen with like public comment being involved.
Yeah.
Even I think if you moved it out to 8, would have been a knockdown, drag-out fight about don't do that, that's going to ruin.
At the same time, what do you think the public comment would be?
This is not good.
Hip, and hip, we hooray. Don't
like no, I mean, I think there's some people.
I've been getting it too easy. No, you're right. I guess there's many different perspectives.
There's some people who are for it. And yeah. I mean, it does.
People who don't drive.
Right. Disincentivize, I guess, driving. So that's good in that respect, you could say. There's another story that you wanted touch on. This is.
Do you want me to touch on it or to dive right in? Because there's a lot of little juicy little bits in it.
Yeah, dive right in, please.
Okay. Well, so the background to it's a Willamette Week story about two, I guess now former psilocybin mushroom purveyors, business owners that are. Doing a little business shift, a slight shift to different industries that have pretty much direct overlap with psilocybin. Once I introduce them, you'll say, "Of course, it's so natural that you would."
One begets the other.
One obviously. Begets the other. You could take a lot of the same practices and apply them to these other industries. So the two businesses we're talking about, we've got the business and this has like a nice sort of like spiritual healing tinge to it. It's called Kaya Holdings Incorporated, which owns the Sacred Mushroom Service Center in Old Town. And then you have Silo Wellness, which was hoping to open up the world's biggest psilocybin retreat just outside of Ashland. I think they were saying it was like they'd bought like 960 acres for a mushroom retreat. And kind of the background to it is that mushrooms become legalized late, I guess, in beginning 2024 and,
for therapeutic use,
and in very controlled, context, because psilocybin is still a class one drug at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important that it's sort of like the use of it is tightly controlled. You have to, have it administered by a licensed therapist And so where a lot of people, I think, saw like the psilocybin industry as maybe following the trajectory of the cannabis industry in Oregon, which now is like, like $1 billion in, revenue in Oregon alone, the psilocybin industry is much more tightly controlled. You have to put in, as a owner of a business, you have to, apply for really expensive permits. You have to put in security cameras and
keep massive safes.
Massive safes to become a licensed therapist that requires thousands of dollars in training. Which training is this is not
Reed hates education. Hates people investing in their own knowledge and wellness.
This is true. And so, there were a lot of people that I think went into the industry with good intentions.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of documented, really excellent applications of like psilocybin therapy.
Yeah, I have an interview coming out next week, but there's a study out of this Oregon service center called Bendable Therapy, and they did a study like 14 months long of a bunch of their participants who opted in and found really statistically significant impacts for people with depression, anxiety. Like it helps their overall wellness. No adverse reactions either. Mm. And it was the first sort of study of psilocybin usage that included people who are on mental health medications,
mm-hmm.
SSRIs. Usually people are not in clinical trials, or they're asked to taper off of those medications in order to be in the clinical trial. And they had similar reactions to psilocybin. So that's cool. So, I mean, it's like, it does, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about it.
To be excited about
it. Some of the reasons that these, some companies have been excited about it because they think it's going to be a real boondoggle. And it's maybe not a way to make a quick buck.
Not a great way to make a quick buck. And you can see, yeah, so there's the side of people that get into the psilocybin industry with good intentions. And then there's another side that I think we can kind of just generally classify as the hucksters and fraudsters who see...
Allegedly.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is all with a tinge of allegibility.
Yeah. Go ahead.
and I might just group these two... the two protagonists in this Willamette Week story.
Yeah,
in
you wouldn't be the first to group them.
In that side of things, you have Kaya Holdings Incorporated. They were hoping to open their sacred mushroom service or extend it to corporate retreats.
Yeah, and what are they doing now?
So they've pivoted to another, let's call it generally just like a beneficial to
yeah, respected
civic
industry.
Well-being, a respected industry, a cryptocurrency.
yeah.
Another, you know, it's like another field with you're still discovering the applications. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I could use this to help empower you know, like historically marginalized communities.
Don't give me the cryptocurrency.
No, I'm sorry.
If anything, cryptocurrency has
no
extreme power to bankrupt people, send them into a depression, and have them have to go to the psilocybin therapy.
Yeah. So they you know, they're pivoting in a way. They say the psilocybin field is too regulated, which, you know what? When you position against cryptocurrency, probably anything's too regulated. In that case, yeah.
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 You went to the deregulation business. Okay, and what about the other guys?
So Psilo Wellness, which was hoping to open up the world's biggest psilocybin retreat, this beautiful, sprawling 960 mushroom retreat acreage, rolling hills, and then the cold hand of the Jackson County Planning Commission comes down and says, no, you have to put all psilocybin businesses have to be on commercial property. And they said, oh, dagger to the heart. Our dreams of making probably an incredibly accessible place for you know, people of all incomes, backgrounds to
access.
Definitely
not wicked expensive for the rich.
No, that's why it's so big to accommodate more people.
Right. And what are they pivoting into?
They're pivoting to ethical defense companies. They're opening up Born Defense, which will end forever wars by achieving peace through strength. They always say, you know what? So they have this really interesting, like, they introduce the business, and the CEO, the CEO of what was the business called again? Psilo Wellness. Like, he's talking about, oh, why did I go into this industry? It's like, oh, there's so much money flooding into the industry, but it's so, you know, corrupt. So the way to kind of amend that is to flood more money into the industry. But
and
this time,
is the defense industry?
This is the defense industry.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because now, like, I guess he's based in Canada, so he's talking about, like, the Canadian defense industry, and they've got a new, you know, these new NATO standards that are, like, all the countries are following to devote 2% of their GDP to defense spending by 2027. So, of course, it's not that aspect of it that he's concerned about, you know, the massive amounts of money now flooding into, you know, funding.
Government contracts to fund forever
unicorn,
wars.
Yeah. My new defense company where I'm, like, sweeping the dregs of mushrooms off the table and I'm saying, okay, I'm thinking of, you know, we can use, like, the mushroom grow kit to start making gunpowder and...
Right, exactly. It's you know, those are typically big overlap for you know, folks who are interested in psychedelic experiences and people who are trying to create, I guess, forever peace instead of forever war, but by making the weapons to make it's all wildly ironic.
They might be packing the shrooms into the weapons, actually, which could be that is achieving sort of
maybe they're going to wherever that weapon ends up, it's going to help people get over their anxiety. Yes, you didn't think about that, did you, when you were being so judgmental about
yeah.
it?
I bet your tune is changing right now.
You're going to have a different feeling about all that.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
And you know what? And I'm sure that the Silo Wellness people, the Born Defense people, they're just hoping we fund this industry right into obsolescence.
Yeah. No, definitely. They seem like that type of people. Well, they're all about helping people.
My dream is that there won't be any more wars. Confusingly, through more wars.
I know how we get there. Also, and maybe this is my own naivete, I didn't think they were starting new defense contractors. I thought, you know, there was like
the existing ones,
the three or four.
It's a hard market to break into.
I thought they had it really locked up, so to speak.
Well, they do say that they're still, because they still, I guess, have some shroom stuff going on. So they're like, we're still open to exploring psychedelic therapy investment with the Department of Defense. For, you know, for like PTSD and traumatic brain injuries, which I'm sure, I'm sorry, I guess, is it the Department of Defense or Department of War now?
Well, the executive order doesn't have the power to rename it, so mm-hmm. it is still it's more of the nickname.
It's colloquially the Department of War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
I'm sure P. Hegseth is going to be looking into mushroom therapy anytime. Actually, he just might be when he hears it on like the Joe Rogan show or whatever.
Yeah.
That's probably their best way in.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't really seem to have a lot of rhetorical power, if I can be honest. No. I don't.
Probably the...
Well, he's Reed's making a hand gesture that is related to alcoholism.
Okay.
What? That yeah, is what
I
it is.
I guess it is what it is.
But this is an audio medium. The people can't see you doing
it's
a little
because
joke.
I'm trying to be subtle.
Okay. Well, then do the sound effect next time.
Warp.
Okay, never mind. I don't want you to do the sound
okay,
effect.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you for telling us about the psilocybin contradiction.
You're welcome.
It's not surprising, but it is disappointing, I suppose.
I'm very disappointed in these two businesses. I thought they'd pivot to like
I thought that the investor class had our best interest at heart.
Yeah. Well, these are the two bad...
I keep getting let down, but my hopes are
still high. These
are
the two bad apples, but everyone else is good.
Yeah, probably.
That's what you have to say.
You have to say it. They make you.
They make you say it. I'm paid to say that.
Anywhere you can make a quick buck. Turns out you can't really make a quick buck in the burgeoning psilocybin industry. In fact... It's kind of like it's expensive to do.
It's quite expensive.
I don't think insurance covers it. So it's like high out-of-pocket costs, kind mm-hmm. of high regulation, you know? But that's part of what happens when you're first.
When life serves you lemons, which in this case is a burgeoning unregulated cryptocurrency exchange and a massively overinflated defense industry.
Got to get in there. No yeah, time
make
like
lemons.
Yeah, make lemons out of lemons. Totally.
You make lemons out of lemons.
I thought we were over cryptocurrency, in a sense.
No.
Like, I thought we knew that it was not good.
But can we do my next segment, which is where I just pitch all my different cryptocurrencies that
I don't really think that... I don't really want to hear that, personally.
And oh, okay.
I guess I don't know that the listeners want to hear that either.
Readcoin?
Readcoin. That might exist. Here's the thing.
That actually might exist. It's a reading-based coin, actually.
Oh.
See, it's READ.
Yeah.
Myself.
Interesting.
It's to promote literacy through financial gain.
Right. Right. That totally makes sense.
They're little tiny books, and they could be, you know, this one's War and Peace. This
and
one's
yes,
like
it's
Prince.
A rug pull, but we're pulling the rug out to set it down nicely.
Set it down nicely.
For circle time.
So you can lay around and read the book.
And read books. Have they written books? I mean, yeah, there's definitely books about cryptocurrency.
Have they? I don't think cryptocurrency people are in the book writing.
They're asking ChatGPT to summarize it.
They're in the asking ChatGPT to do my, write a quick autobiography of me.
Yeah, a lot of M dashes in a lot of those, I'll tell you what. Let's do a little reset. You are listening to Genius Box on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Althea. I'm here with Reed.
Hello.
We've been covering some headlines and goings on that you may have missed this week, and we are going to
we've been goings off on the goings ons. You like that?
It's okay. It could grow on me. I'm open to it. And what do you think? Are you ready to take a little musical break? We're gonna have calls just after the break here.
Yeah.
We're gonna hear some tunage, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to KBOO Radio. This is Genius Box. I'm Althea. I'm here with Reed.
Hello.
Hi, Reed. Oh, got solemn in the music break.
Sorry. My voice just deepened.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Sorry. We're getting to the call in where we want folks to call in to the show, which is this show. And sorry.
Seamless.
Let me... Can I stick to
this
mount or what?
It's good that this show is scripted.
Yeah. Sorry. It said, Althea trips over her words. Althea recovers. Althea acknowledges the script and then moves on.
Fire
the intern. Who wrote this damn thing? You may have seen...
Intern bot.
You may have seen this OPB article this week. It's called Portland Troop Deployment Sparks Mixed Reactions Across Oregon. Folks have been none too happy with this piece because... Because OPB went around the state and asked a bunch of people who've heard of Portland what they thought about whether our city is war ravaged, and
they got their sort of like impressionistic takes on Portland painted in broad, vivid colors of.
Yeah, so there's a woman from Crook County who said that she used to come to Portland to shop and dine, but then she, you know, last November
there was an incident.
She was too afraid to walk two blocks to Fred Meyer and then, like, stayed in and locked her door. A Tualatin resident says he was supportive of sending federal troops. Can I read the quote? I love the quote.
Oh, please.
Quote, what are we supposed to do? Not send troops in there? I mean, obviously, the leadership in Portland is not willing to deal with it, so they left the door open for somebody that is going to try to do it. Hey, what is that? What do you mean?
I love
what are we supposed to do? Not send troops in?
Not send troops in there? Yeah.
This has suddenly been sprung upon it. What, are we not supposed to do that?
We got them, so what are we going to do with them?
Yeah. Yeah, and then somebody else saying that Portland is pig slop, but mm-hmm. I mean, they live in Hines.
It was the most beautiful city in the United States when they lived there.
And then, you know, they're ready slop. For the, you know, it opens up a lot of questions. One, why did you publish this? Two, what do they think that the, like, I'm very curious about how the question was framed to people.
Oh, yeah.
Because there is, you know, this feeling that Portland isn't what it used to be, and Portland is, like, dangerous and criminal, and, but are they thinking about the protests, mm-hmm. which is the sort of official excuse kind of narrative about this, or are they thinking about homelessness?
Mm-hmm.
And because the military is not going to fix homelessness. I'll say it.
Nope.
People are not
coming in to build homes, I'll tell you that.
No. And so even the way that the article is structured,
that is a great question, Althea, because in this article, I would say there's a lot of it's or a complete lack of description.
Yeah.
The it is really doing a lot of legwork there in
heavy
the,
lifting for your imagination
I hope the military does it's what's going on in Portland.
Yeah.
That has to be resolved. I was in Portland and that time has changed the way that I see Portland.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a reporter, might ask them, what exactly are you talking about?
Yeah, what would you like to see the military do?
what exactly are you... Because it's just, it's just kind of a lot of empty descriptives that paint a picture of Portland as war-torn, but do not give any sort of substantive evidence as to why these people believe it's war-torn, what they speak to as, like, a better Portland, what incident has turned them off Portland.
Yeah. Yeah, when we were discussing this yesterday, you said something that maybe is illustrative, that, you know, when people say, like, oh, I felt, you know, like, you need to be able to be specific about what your experience is and what you're actually talking about. Because if somebody's like, oh, you know, X experience, oh, I just felt really unsafe. It's like, well, can you pinpoint what happened so we can do something about it? Or you just didn't like that? And because in this case, what is sort of underlying is I don't like that there's poor people, and I don't want to see that.
Exactly.
And I wish that downtown I didn't have to see that, and now I do have to see it when I'm there.
Which, yeah, exactly. If you say that, then you can address, you know, the spade is a spade, but as it stands here, there's like this, you know, all you get out of this is like some sort of like Lovecraftian, like, force of evil that's, you know, emanating in Portland, and there's no clear description of what that is. And so,
and it's from folks who are living pretty far away and living pretty infrequently.
Let's say outside of Portland. let's say generously, yeah. I think there's someone from Redmond, which is pretty close to Portland. There's someone from Hines,
Tualatin, Hines,
which is not close to Portland. I would say Hines is not terribly close to Portland.
And I mean, this is not like new rhetoric per se. It's been being parroted by Republican representatives from different mm-hmm. parts of Oregon. Minority Leader Christine Drazen. Mm-hmm. You guys remember Lori Chavez Dreamer, now Secretary of Labor. I shouldn't be disappointed by her saying that they need to crack down, but it is just, it's a little bit of a, it's like you definitely know that that's not true. And that's, and whatever. We're full out lying. I get it. Just a little bit of
Mark Owens, Republican from Crane. All these people that are going, they're always staying at a downtown hotel and they're having an uneasy moment.
Yeah. As soon as these guys find out you don't have to stay downtown, it could really open things up for them. I'll just say it.
I guess Mark does actually say, he says, I was uncomfortable with the visible drug use and sale of drugs in the street. It was sad to see, but provided a great learning opportunity for conversations with my kids, which I would love to see what the learning opportunity.
Well, he's put a positive spin on it. You got to give him credit for that.
He does put a positive spin on it. That's
but
true.
Anyway, to get back to what we want to talk about, what we want people to call in about, this is the question.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of assumptions about Portland and part of these assumptions, especially the ones we're experiencing right now, are maybe based on footage from 5 years ago. What's an assumption that you made about Portland that you don't think is true? Or what's something, you know, if there's somebody else in your life that made an assumption about Portland that you had to correct, let us know. 503-231-8187. We would love, love, love to hear from you. We have Jeff on the line with us. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, you lovely young people. I'm calling from the war-ravaged heart of North Portland, what we used to call Little Beirut, also named that by a Republican. I'm calling on several fronts, on several issues. Number one is I believe that the plural of genius is genii. Number two is that the Department of Defense, now calling itself war, messed with LSD back in the late 60s, and there was a whole big controversy over their experimentation with LSD. So the military and psychedelics have been going together for a long, long time. And one more thing, and that is that you mentioned the old trope that when life gives you lemons, I think that needs to be amended. When life gives you lemons, you need to reach for your sugar ball, because just squeezing lemons is not lemonade. You must add sweetness to make it lemonade. When life gives you lemons, reach deep into your soul for your sugar ball, and then you might have something that's palatable called lemonade. As to what the impressions of Portland were when I first moved here 30 years ago, it was a small American city, and right before my eyes, under my feet, the thing has changed, and it has become entirely, the word we use is gentrified, but for instance, Division Street, which probably should have been the street renamed Cesar Chavez because of its original name, Division, which we don't need more of, but Division Street has become a canyon of glorified towers, gentrification towers, that benefit only a few. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
I really like what you said about lemonade. I think that that is a great point. And I will, in my personal life, start to bring that in, because it is a little bit more complex than just, like, lemon. You're making lemon juice, and there's a lot of uses for lemon juice, but it's not the same as lemonade.
No, it's a bitter medicine that you're giving to other people if you're just squeezing lemons in their face. In fact, it'll hurt their eyes as well as their throat.
Yeah, well, I haven't done that, but I'll try.
Yeah, it's you can also work on the application. You're a little kinder with the application of the lemon juice.
We'll figure it out.
I can spit vitriol, like, with the best of them, but I think they'd all prefer a little sweetness in their lemonade. Thank you so much, and carry on. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Jeff. Appreciate the call. Folks, if you want to call in and talk to us, please, 503-231-8187. We're asking folks, based on some of the outside assumptions about Portland that we're confronting right now, what's an assumption that you had about Portland that you don't think is true anymore? Or you've experienced somebody else's making of these assumptions. We would love to know. We would love to know. Okay, we have Santiago on the line. Hi, Santiago.
Hello, Santiago.
Good morning. I mean, I get a lot of people from out of town who, you know, who have asked about the whole war-torn thing, or like, is crime really bad out here? And it's, you know, just, I don't know. I just tell them, you know, we're no different than many other big cities. You know, we're not as big as others, but, you know, every big city is dealing with houselessness, is dealing with rampant drug use. And it's just, you tell people, you know, it's like, it's not a sign of crime so much. I mean, it is a sign of crime, but it's not like petty crime. It's like the crime of you know, bleeding the center so the perimeter can expand. You know, they taking our tax dollars and throwing it into all these different programs that help the empire to expand at the cost of the people, and then they. It's like shooting somebody in the leg and then giving them a hard time for not being able to walk.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, I think that's the real crime. I mean, Jeff was kind of talking about that. You know, it's like the, you know, it's like when during Obama's administration, like Republicans would be like, they'd be just like making like thinly veiled racist jokes as a way to like say that the Obama presidency was wrong. And it's like, you tell them like, look, you could actually have like legit critiques of what's going on, but instead you're turning to like these really like empty assertions. And I think that's what really bugs me more than anything is it's, and I'm not really disappointed at Republicans because that's kind of what they do, you know, at this point, but I'm more disappointed in the Democrats for not actually having a counter message. Mm-hmm. And not that I'm, and it's really on the fact they're supposed to be the opposition and we really don't have one, but I digress. It's
but no,
you
it's,
know, and you guys are talking about it. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, like affordability is, and houses is an issue in also in all Oregon cities. And it's interesting that in this article, they tend to, they focus all the attention on Portland when it's well documented that it is a, it is an issue gripping every single Oregon town.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's what people don't, and I think that's something that's purposely kept out of the media because it just, it, you can't have a nuanced conversation about poverty. Like you have to just make fun of poor people and the things that poor people do. It's like when the boomers are like, how come these young kids got their avocado toast and their iPhones and their blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know what? Some of these cats ain't even going to be able to retire, let alone own a home. Somebody was, I think it was this guy that I listened to, Hassan, was making a joke about how, like, think about how much spending power you had back in the 50s and 60s that, and, you know, he was being facetious, but, like, that a man could have a whole separate house with a whole separate family on top of Keeper's family that he could have on top of his own. It's like, think about how much spending power you had when unions were strong, and now you can't even think about owning your own home when you become the age of 30. And like a one bedroom apartment, you got to think about if you can even afford a place with roommates.
Here's the thing, you know? Santiago. I think that that actually might be, it's possible that that rhetoric could really galvanize Republicans to take affordable housing seriously. If there's anybody who
exactly,
you can't afford
a second family anymore.
That's your God given right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're the they're the party of family values. You know, I mean, all their
yeah.
I mean, how many multiple of these family guys values. Are being ripped? How many of these guys are being ripped ripped apart for doing all sorts of illicit activities? You're like, guys, if you want to afford five or six families, let's get the spending power going. Come on,
exactly.
All of us.
Listen,
and last thing I'll say, and then you guys can let me go. I think that's the missing thing is rhetoric. Democrats are awful at rhetoric. Like, they could be doing more to message. I mean, even having something as facetious as saying you could have enough spending power to have three families if we could just get our, we could just get this workers movement going. You know what I mean? Like it's stuff like
a
that.
A little
they
humor.
Message on, but they don't message at all.
Yeah.
You know,
a little
something
bite
that actually speaks to the people and what they need.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Thank you for the call, Santiago.
Thank you, Santiago. Yeah. I mean, it gets to that, you know, the OPB article, there's, it's just a bunch of sound bites, and then it's like, what was the point of this art? What argument were you making? Just that people that live outside Portland consume media and see the world through the media they consume?
Right, and also, I mean, I guess it's kind of nothing new, but I mean, this kind of connects to what Santiago was saying, which is, it's. I mean, I agree that Democrats, by and large, bad at rhetoric. In the case of Portland, it's, I will say it's a little bit more of a, well, I'm so, it's harder to devise rhetoric around, no, everything's fine. Like that doesn't whip people into a frenzy the way fear, death, and destruction does.
Of course. Yeah.
And it's interesting in the case of Portland where you see that people who have been previously fomenting this kind of fearful rhetoric
have to turn
for
around.
Example, your People for Portland,
yeah.
Sometimes the Metro Chamber has been saying, we're doomed, we're dying.
Portland Business Alliance turning around.
Why don't you do something about this? You know, that's rhetoric that leaks out. But now they're on the opposite side of it. Like, do not bring the troops. And I'm glad. I don't think that the National Guard should come here. And of course, it's bad for any number of reasons. Pretty far down the list for me is that it's bad for small businesses, but I agree that it's also bad for that reason and we should stop it because of that too. But you know, this is...
Did they think it was going to lead to anything else? Their yeah. only issue is that it's not the PPP that are cracking down. It's the National Guard.
Yeah. Yeah. They're calling... They're saying that PPP is Antifa now.
Folks, have you heard? There's been a change in management in the Portland.
Conservatives are saying that now, which is kind of an odd take, I guess you could say. You can give us a call. Talk to us about this, please. 503-231-8187. We would love to know what you think about this. And, you know, is there an assumption that you had about Portland that you don't think is true? Or have you heard assumptions from other people about what it is, what goes on in this town? We have Tawasi.
Sleepy Hollow. Hello, Tawasi.
Tawasi's on the line. Hello.
Good morning. Hey, you know, just to start off, I'm an old dude. Not on the level of Jeff, but definitely not on the level of, I'm assuming here, not on the level of you two geniuses.
you lose genius with age.
Out, I don't think that's true.
just to start out, I am an old dude, okay? I moved to Oregon in 1997, and a lot of the assumptions that I had then were true, which is that you could support your family in Oregon off of folk art. So my family moved up here as a group of artists, and we made our whole living at the Saturday Market. And, you know, at that time, gentrification hadn't really taken root entirely on the east side. And even just by the Moda Center was still, you know, very diverse, culturally rich neighborhood of oppressed people who are still surviving in Portland. So, you know, what I assumed then is that there were, there were good ways that people who lived alternative lifestyles could make a living in Portland. And we did for a while. My brother still does okay. But the idea that Portland is some liberal stronghold, which is currently, you know, peddled, it's just not true. And I wish people could understand that. I wish there was a way I could convey to people Portland is a neoliberal hellscape. You know, you have to pay $75 to the city for the right to give a sandwich to a hungry person. The city negotiates their police contract in secret behind closed doors. You know, over half of all arrests in Portland are of homeless people, which represent about 3% of the city's total population. So, you know, there's this assumption that Portland is just like this anarchist jurisdiction full of people who are just progressives that are coddling the downtrodden, but it's not true. There's a very small handful of us who are still out there taking care of the most vulnerable, but for the most part, it's a bunch of, pardon my French, pink pea hat wearing people who step over the oppressed. They show up on No King's Day and step right over the people who are most oppressed by fascism. So, you know, it's not a progressive city. And all of the arts districts, those are for the wealthy people. They're not for the people who make up the majority of the city of Portland. So, you know, if there are any Republicans listening, you would fit right in Portland. Because a bunch of people in Portland just do not care about humanity. And if it was different from that, then you wouldn't have a neo-fascist sitting as the CEO of OPB. You would have a progressive as the CEO of OPB. You know, when we look at the Oregonian, when we look at KGW or COIN or OPB, we see all of these far-right people sitting in editorial rooms forming our ideas of what Portland is based on nonsense. It's not even true. If you look at the actual nuts and bolts of the city, then you find oppression. You know, whether it's the zoning board being racist, oh, you can't cook your pho. It upsets the delicate palate of your YT neighbor. Oh, you can't have your grass long. The zoning, like all of our things are complaint driven. And then you have these, you know, mayonnaise eaters out there making complaints against black owned properties. So then black owned properties have the highest zoning infractions, not because they're the worst properties, but because racist neighbors are constantly turning them in. You can just go down the list on any policy, and what you'll find is racism. Even inside the city's own DEI office, the people had to quit because they were being, you know, bigoted. They're bigots inside of the DEI office. So, you know, people have this idea that Portland is some liberal paradise. But when you put your boots on the ground, there's a handful of people who are decent people that are out there lifting up the most vulnerable. And there are masses and masses of people who OPB can't wait to interview and hear their, you know, their
reactionary take.
Tears, YT tears spilling over broken glass policing. So, you know, I don't know if you can hear the chickens and stuff. I left Portland. I'm living like on a horse ranch in the country. And I just foam at the mouth now when I think about it, because there are so many people who are roped into this idea that Portland is a liberal paradise, but it's just not. It's just not. And you can look at the chamber, or you can look at, you know, if you, you know, the Sondland Group, right? They just got the Ritz-Carlton built, and it's already in foreclosure. So these guys take millions of dollars from the city to build these colossal skyscrapers that lock the poor outside and then file for bankruptcy, take a huge bath on the property just to get write-offs from their Wall Street gains. So no, you know, I don't think of it as a liberal paradise. I'm glad I'm out of Portland. And, you know, not because of the fact that it's crawling with anarchists and Antifa and Democrats, but because you guys will walk right past, not you two geniuses, the rest of you listeners will walk right past a person who's being oppressed, who is being neglected, who's being arrested, who's having their camp evicted. You'll walk right past them, say, that's not my problem, and watch while they suffer. And that's, to me, that's, not only is it un-American, it's not, we don't do that in America, but that's not even what human beings do. If you can walk right past a person suffering, if you can let your police have their contracts negotiated in secret, you are a part of the problem. And if you don't stand up against open fascism, then you're going to keep talking about hot dog stands in city parks instead of people being murdered. Because Chris Kneipp, he killed an anti-fascist. He was left to walk free in the street for years. You know, there have been multiple far-right killers in our city that murdered people. And the police basically stand aside for them. You can, if the Proud Boys came to Portland today, the police would stand with their back to the Proud Boys carrying guns and arrest protesters who were carrying signs. And, you know, that's just, that's, that, that encompasses the whole country, but specifically Portland. Mm-hmm. We're not a liberal paradise.
We're not really that different from a lot of other places. Tawasi, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate that. I think, yeah, what I agree with a lot of what Tawasi said. There's not this, it really is not that different from other places in the U.S. They're like the powers that control those things control here as well, still predominate. I think there is, I guess my, and it's not to be like an optimistic spin on it, but I see a lot of, what I think is different about Portland is there's a lot of potential, and I hope that maybe folks can hear in Tiwassee that like, that call to action, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, if this is the, if the National Guard descending on our city is what's getting you worked up, maybe let's take a little bit more of a global view and see what else this touches. And not to like depress you, because it is kind of depressing if you get, if you get, if once you get that kind of perspective, but also to sort of energize, because there's stuff that's right in front of you that can be acted on right now.
And I think a good point by Tiwassee is like this whole narrative about Portland as a war zone does kind of like it might thrust you into a, you know, like trying to step up to the defense of the city, which, you know, like I want to make it very clear, we're not a war zone, but also like it does kind of obfuscate like a little bit of that self-critique that you should be doing, like how do I want to embed, you know, the city, and what steps does it still need to take, because it can, you know, it can kind of thrust you into that position of you know, defending a city that, yeah, I think as Tiwassee points out, you know, it's a tricky rhetorical position.
I mean, I think the obvious counter is, well, no, it's not a war zone. And then the extension of that is everything's fine.
No,
everything's not fine, which has been acknowledged. Which
we love
like,
everything about Portland.
Everything about Portland is good, and every other city that has problems is bad. You know, like it's
PPB is an Antifa. They're actually
PPB is protecting us. You know, like roll it back. That's actually not the case. But yeah. I think it's a little bit of, you know, the way that you talk about, it's sort of like your family in a sense of like, well, we can say that, but you don't get to say that about
right.
it. We'll handle it internally, rightly or wrongly. We have Barth on the line in our last few minutes here. Hey, Barth.
Hello, Barth.
Good morning. I only caught the last few minutes of your show, which have been wildly entertaining. Tiwassee and his comments are welcome, because people need to get a little dope slap every now and again and say, you know, it's a bigger world and there are things going on. And I'm sorry he's on a kind of a downer right now, and there are positive things happening here and elsewhere. But his opinion and the other opinions you hear on shows like this help make Portland a better place. And that's why you should support this radio station and the people that put it together. That's my one two cents. The other two cents is, on a lighter note, hauling back to your previous caller, Santiago, he said, oh, well, you can't afford a second house and a second mortgage for your other wife. Well, the Republicans want all the women to stay home and have lots of babies, so you're going to have enough financial burden holding your first family in a house, and I'm saying that in a tongue-in-cheek manner, but the world is weird enough, and it's good to take a good look at it at least once in a while and see where it stands and where it makes you stand. And if you don't like the place you're standing in, open your eyes and move.
Love That's that. It.
Thank you, Barth. Quippy. We didn't even pay Bart for that. Yeah. Free, that was free advertising.
Get to step in, is what he's saying. Got to get a move on. No, I appreciate that for sure. And yeah, I mean, there's it's a little, this is like why I like doing talk radio, is just hearing from different people. Cause I know how.
It's Gavin.
Well, I love to talk, of course, but also, you know, the way that things land with me and the things that sort of strike me about something are different from what stands out to other folks. And getting that melding of the minds in the genius box, which is where we are right now.
We're in the pressure cooker that is the genius box. As Althea and my mind slowly congeal into kind of they're slowly ruifying.
You're so visceral today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's been reading Goosebumps since it's October.
Scary. That's why I've been together. So quiet, because I've my nose is just firmly pressed against the page.
Shout out R.L. Stein.
You can't see it, but I have a blanket over my head. I have the flashlight under my chin.
Wait, we should make a blanket fort in here and do an episode from a blanket fort.
Althea, we are doing the show from a blanket fort.
Yeah, we're calling you from the we're calling you from the house phone with all of our ideas, and we're telling spooky stories.
We're telling spooky stories.
Don't worry, guys, it's not true. Portland is not war torn.
No, all the
but also,
yes.
Can I say
I said the Goosebumps. The Goosebumps are all based on true stories.
We'll deal with that off air. I just wish I want to get back to words meaning things. You know what I mean? I've just been, I mean, obviously.
Wow, that's that's an backhanded comment to me.
Is it?
Saying, let's get back to words meaning things?
I was saying, well, because you said war-torn. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
I'm thinking about the word war-torn and how, like, that word has now been totally, like, cheapened. And mm-hmm. that our empathy and our sympathy for people who just live somewhere where someone else wanted to do a war.
Yeah.
Like, now that's been conflated with walking in downtown Portland on your way to the Schnitz or whatever, you know, like that's not, we need, let's keep the language, you know.
Yeah. The death of meaningful language.
Well, that's a good note to end on, right?
Okay.
Hey, the death of meaningful language. You guys had fun, right? On the Genius Box, in the Genius Box.
Underneath
the Genius Box. Thank you to Nate, our engineer. Thank you to you for listening. And
thank you to us.
And thank you to us for being here.
For being here.
And you're welcome also. I hope everybody has a great weekend. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.